Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. We're broadcasting live today from Orlando, Florida, and we're going to be talking about a topic that has already caused some controversy, and that has to do with Time Magazine's cover story on the Twixters, that is, the generation that won't grow up. I've been talking about this for some time, and as a matter of fact, I published an article at crosswalk.com on that topic already this week, and some folks loved it, and others hated it. It ought to make for an interesting conversation, that coming up in our second segment. First of all, United States Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is now stating that her first task as the new Secretary of State will be to go to the Middle East to try to jumpstart democracy there. Speaking to reporters, the new Secretary of State said this: the President has set forth a really bold agenda for American foreign policy, and the State Department has got to be in the lead in this period in which democracy will be so important to solidifying the gains of the last few years and to pressing forward an agenda for a freer and more prosperous world, end quote. According to Richard Boucher, the State Department spokesman, we will see the new Secretary of State going to the Middle East from February 22 through 25. And that'll be the first major initiative in the Middle East after the reelection of President George W. Bush. And I just have to tell you, folks, I think Condoleezza Rice, the new Secretary of State, is going to be a wonderful voice and face for America around the world. And it's time for something new. It's time, also, we need to say, for the State Department to get on board with this administration. And I think the confirmation of Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is a great step in that direction, and I'm expecting great things. Of course, all eyes are now on the election in Iraq coming on Sunday. The January 30 elections will be the first major exercise of democracy in the history of Arab nations. And, you know, all this in the background with Afghanistan and with the votes in the Palestinian territories and all this, we need to realize that what's happening in Iraq is more important than anything that has come thus far. And we're all going to be watching, and we need to be praying, we need to be concerned, we need to know that those who will be voting in this Iraqi election will be demonstrating a courage that goes beyond anything most of us can imagine when we think of this, the task of the citizen in voting. And already, of course, we've been looking at terror threats, leaflets thrown out of cars saying, if you vote, we'll cut off your heads and the heads of your children. And yet, there are other pictures coming out, too. It's an amazing thing to see a nascent, early, embryonic democracy at work. And you know what? They don't have a lot of the polish that you see in American presidential campaigns. We're not talking about spending the hundreds of millions of dollars. We're not talking the press agents and all the political consultants. Advertisements, they look like, well, the first time a nation's ever tried an election. Some of them are actually pretty humorous. But in the bottom line, we have the reality that this people now has a real opportunity to assert national self-determination, to show what liberty and ordered freedom and democracy can all be about. And we need to be encouraging the Iraqis. You know, I am fed up with those who say it can't happen. I think we as Americans should register our outrage at some around the world, including some in Europe, who say this is a people not yet ready for democracy. Let me ask you a question. Were the founding fathers of the United States ready for democracy? Benjamin Franklin wasn't absolutely certain that the nation was. Famously, a woman asked him during a break in the Constitutional Convention, what kind of government will we have? And he answered, a democracy, if you can keep it. Very critical word from the founding father who was so instrumental in the creation of the Constitution itself when he said, look, the qualification is this. You can start out with a democracy. The test is whether you can keep it. If that was true in the 1780s for the United States of America, it was all the more true for India in the late 1940s. This was a nation that had never experienced democracy, and now it is the world's most populous democracy, an unbroken series of democratically elected governments since the late 1940s. And what about Japan? A nation that had absolutely no democratic heritage, no understanding of a republican form of government, no real understanding of the role of citizens and freedom and liberty and all the rest. And now, again, for a half century, Japan has now demonstrated what it means to be a democracy, a succession of democratic governments there in the nation of Japan. How dare we say it can't happen in Iraq? I want to take my hat off to those who in Iraq are running for office and those who are going to be doing the voting. As the Wall Street Journal said today, it's a choice between ballots and bullets. And we need to hope that the people of Iraq will choose the ballot rather than the bullet. President George W. Bush has been talking a lot to the media these days. He held his first press conference of the second administration this week, and he's also been giving a round of interviews, and he gave 2 hours to the New York Times. The New York Times has published something about what that interview was all about, cover story, analysis, and the rest, but they also gave a partial transcript, and I want you to listen to just a little bit of what the president had to say. The president was asked about a Florida law that the Supreme Court just refused to nullify. They refused to take the case that would have challenged the constitutionality of the law that bars gay men and gay women from adopting children. Now, clearly, I have to tell you, as you look at this, the editors of the New York Times thought they had the president on the defensive. After all, not only is this an issue that would have national consequences, but his brother Jeb is governor of the state of Florida and was the legal officer who was responsible to defend this law in the U.S. Supreme Court had it taken the case. Listen to how the president responded. He said, "The ideal of society is to raise children with a man and a woman. Private adoption firms can make whatever choice they choose to do, but as president, I will always be aiming for the ideal. I don't know this particular case. I just gave you my general principles. I just said the ideal is where a child being raised by a man and a woman, that's the ideal, a married man and a woman, and as governor and as president, when I was governor of Texas, my position was that this is the ideal. I believe children can receive love from gay couples, but the ideal is, and studies have shown that the ideal, is where a child is raised in a married family with a man and a woman." End quote. Well, as they say in some parts of this country, those are fighting words. I read that deeply embedded in this transcript, and I realized there's a big story here. The president of the United States, in the face of a politically correct culture, in the face of all kinds of opposition, including, I can assure you, opposition from the editors of the New York Times, told them straight to their face that the ideal is for a child to be raised by a man and a woman, and he went beyond that, and he said a man and a woman married to each other. Any way you look at it, that's bravery, that's courage in action, and that's President George W. Bush speaking to the editors of the New York Times. Folks, we've been talking about the controversy having to do with intelligent design, and all across the country you're seeing this. Time Magazine this week, the Washington Post Sunday edition, and now today's edition of the Wall Street Journal, an article by David Klinghoffer entitled "The Branding of a Heretic." There's a lot to this story. We talked about the article by Stephen Meyer that had been published in a very obscure scientific peer-reviewed journal. That's a big qualification here, a peer-reviewed journal. You see, the opponents of intelligent design, that is to say, the absolute evangelists and diehards for evolution, they said the problem with intelligent design is because it's not science, because it's not really published in peer-reviewed journals. So Stephen Meyer wrote an article, by the way, a Cambridge-educated scientist, and it was accepted and published in a peer-reviewed journal. Now they say that peer-reviewed journal isn't a qualified journal simply because it ran the article in intelligent design. Are you following me? Well, then you've got a problem, because this is what you call a circular argument. It's kind of like saying it's not science, eventually, just because we say it's not. But now the story goes all the way to the Smithsonian Institution, and my wife and kids and I were in Washington for the inauguration last week. We saw several of the museums in the Smithsonian, and we are in the middle of a political battle that gets down to what happens in and is employed by America's most prestigious museum. In this case, you have a scientist by the name of Richard Sternberg, who is a research associate at the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History. And he's in trouble because he was the editor of the journal that accepted Stephen Meyer's article. Now he is charging that he is under a religious attack, suffering discrimination on the basis of his religious belief simply for questioning the theory of evolution. And David Klinghoffer, in this article in the Wall Street Journal, "The Branding of a Heretic," blows the lid off of the fact that there is now a widespread spirit of intimidation, fear on the part of employees of the Smithsonian Institution that if they get outed as believers, they could be in big trouble. Their jobs could be up. And it's not just Christians either. It's also a Jewish person who had prayed a Jewish prayer in the aftermath of a death of one of the co-worker's family members. And this person said, so now they're going to think that I'm a religious person, and that's not a good thing at the museum. Well, David Klinghoffer is exactly right. This shows you who the real extremists are. The extremists are those who call themselves scientists, who are so committed to the theory of evolution that they won't even allow the idea of intelligent design to gain a fair hearing. They say they're all about objectivity, but they're not taking an objective view of this. This is how Klinghoffer ends his article. He says, intelligent design, in any event, is hardly a made-to-order prop for any particular religion. Goes on and speaks about this being the reason that atheist Anthony Flew now says he believes in some kind of God. But listen to this. Darwinism, by contrast, is an essential ingredient in secularism, that aggressive quasi-religious faith without a deity. The Sternberg case seems, in many ways, an instance of one religion persecuting a rival, demanding loyalty from anyone who enters one of its churches, like the National Museum of Natural History. That's right. They've turned this museum into a church for the faith of evolution. And they consider this scientist a heretic. Well, God bless him. We're going to be watching this story closely because it tells you that the scientific establishment that is so committed to evolution understands intelligent design to be a real threat. Well, folks, this Time Magazine cover article is really important because it deals with a generational reality, a generation that won't grow up. We'll be back to talk about it and what it means. From Orlando, Florida, I'm Albert Mueller. Well, you probably saw it on the newsstands, the pictures of a young man sitting in a sandbox. The title on the cover of Time magazine this week, Meet the Twixters, young adults who live off their parents, bounce from job to job, and hop from mate to mate. They're not lazy, they just won't grow up. Now, this caught my attention directly because, as you know, on this program, we've been talking about this for some time. I've been talking about it on college and university campuses, in churches. I've been talking about it on the air. I've been writing about it in my published online commentaries. And I've been hearing from people who don't like what we're talking about one bit. But we're talking about a massive demographic reality that really is changing the way Americans live and the way Americans grow up, or for that matter, don't grow up, the way Americans get married or don't get married. You're talking about people in their late 20s and their 30s who are, for instance, moving back home. They're not moving out, buying homes, getting married, having children. Instead, like something of an extended version of the sitcom Friends, the drama, they're simply moving along through life, returning to some kind of adolescence after college. Lev Grossman's the main author of this cover story for Time magazine, and he appears to be somewhat shocked by this phenomenon, but it's not particularly new. But frankly, I'm kind of glad it's getting some attention now, and there's no better attention than a cover story in Time magazine. He looks at the lives of several of these individuals, and they're interesting stories, of course. You're dealing here with young people. One of the young women in this particular cover story has had 17 jobs in about 6 years. Many of them are living back with their parents. We're told that they are now a prime market for electronics and new cars and all the rest because they're not working at the kind of job that's going to be a lifelong experience, the kind of job they're going to base as a career. They're just testing things out. Now, as you look at this, here are just a couple of the realities. Number one, they're not getting married. And number two, they are having sex. In other words, we've been talking for a long time about the fact that puberty is coming lower than ever before, and marriage is going higher and higher and higher, the age of marriage. So you're looking at this massive span, and if you think that's going to get better, this cover story will tell you, if anything, it's likely to get worse. People are putting off marriage into their 30s, sometimes the late 30s, 40s, and then sometime in there they may try to have kids. You're looking at a massive change in the way human beings live. For most of human history, and not, I would argue, for accidental reasons, but because of the way God made us, one of the first marks of adulthood was finding a mate, getting married, becoming committed, growing up, being responsible, getting that kind of job that will sustain you through adult life, and going through the hard work of bearing and raising children. Now, as I said many times, the discipline of raising children is not just something that requires parents to raise children, but in some ways the children raise the parents, not in terms of authority, but in terms of the parents learning a whole new level of responsibility simply by the task of parenthood. Men become better men as parents, and women become better women. And, of course, the same thing's true in a fundamental way in the crucible of marriage. Time story tells us that, if anything, this picture is going to get worse because this phenomenon is a deeply rooted demographic reality, and it's not just in America either. In fact, in a review of the international scene, the magazine went from country to country showing that the average age of first marriage in the United States, as it's been going up and up and up, is being mirrored in other countries as well. As a matter of fact, some countries in Europe have even older ages. In Germany, they're called the Nesthocker. That is the nest squatters, these kids. In France, they're called the Tanguy syndrome because they don't move out of their parents' apartment, but they have plenty of time to go for a tanning bed. In England, they're called the Kippers, which stands for kids in parents' pockets eroding retirement savings. That kind of gets to an economic point. In Canada, they're called the Boomerang kids. In Italy, the Mamon, which means literally mama's kids. They can't give up mama's cooking. And in Japan, the Freeder, which is a combination of free and Arbeiter, the German words for worker and freedom. Well, there you have it. You're dealing with a generation that simply won't grow up. Now, there are so many issues related to this. First of all, the question, why? Why has this generation refused to grow up? What kind of factors are in the background here? Is it something about their baby boomer parents? Is it something about the fact that they were so coddled throughout their adolescence and childhood that no one ever told them that they were supposed to grow up? Is it because they simply don't know how to do this? They lack the life skills to pull this off? Now, I have a particular interest in this generational cohort, you know, say from 18 to 25 and then 25 and older. I work with these folks day in and day out. They are a wonderful generation, but here is a fundamental problem. Many of them simply don't know how to move from adolescence to adulthood. Now, what's going to happen? We've been talking about in China where you had, you know, a surplus of males and not enough women. And we talked about the fact that, you know, you can't solve that problem. Once these men are 20, you can't create 20-year-old women for them to marry. They're 25. You can't create 25-year-old women. Demographic trends take a long time to be reversed. And they also take a long time to show their full impact on the culture. What is it going to mean when you're dealing with a generation that is now extending adolescence, not only through the teens, but really through the 20s, even into some of the years of the 30s? To me, it's an absolutely frightening phenomenon. And I have to say, as a Christian theologian, I think as you read the Bible, you come to understand that adulthood is a major goal. It's a major expectation. The taking on of adult responsibility is a central part of what God intended for human beings. Getting married, having children, doing the things that adults do. That should seem to be as not only as American as apple pie, as biblical as understanding that this is God's intention. Now, when you look at that, you realize, obviously, we have a problem. What are churches teaching? What are pastors saying? But more fundamentally, what are parents and family members doing about this? I want you to join the conversation. Number one, why do you think this generational trend is a reality? What has produced this? And number two, what do you think we should do about it? Should we just go around to 20-year-olds saying, grow up? How do we show them how to grow up? Give me a call, toll-free nationwide. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Time magazine is pretty brutal in this article. For instance, just on the sexual side, it indicates that these young people are doing an awful lot of what you could just call bed hopping. Rather than establishing the committed relationships of purity and covenant fidelity that marriage represents as set forth in the Bible, they're running around because, listen, these are the peak years of sexual availability, of fertility, and all the rest. And so why should we be surprised? Now, I'll just tell you the economic side of this I find also interesting. People who move back home in order so they can buy more toys, I want to tell you, and I have a feeling this is going to spark some calls that people aren't going to like what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think a lot of this is that you have young people whose economic expectations are so high they can't possibly, in their minds, get married until they're able to live a lifestyle that, frankly, is either equal to or higher than where their parents are. And I think that's a real problem. Rather than getting together and sacrificing together, they're putting this off for a very, very long time. We've got callers calling from all over the country. There's still time for you to call. In the next segment, we're going to get to a conversation about the Twixters and why they have come about as a major trend in America. What to do about it? The phone number again, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It says a lot when Time Magazine puts this on a cover story because, of course, they're not concerned about the family in the same way that we are. We expect that if it's on Time's cover, it's because they see this as a major national issue. For one thing, you have President Bush talking about Social Security reform. What does it mean when you have an entire generation that, frankly, in terms of their career pattern, is waiting to get into an established career until after their parents may even have retired? I wonder what it's like from the parent side, by the way, when all of a sudden you send them off to college and a few years later they're back in their bedroom. It's a new world. The phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I think the issue here is more fundamental than demographics. Because lifestyle choices reveal convictions, worldview, passions. And that's our territory for conversation on the Albert Mohler Program. We'll be right back with your calls.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking about Time Magazine's cover story on the Twixters, the generation that won't grow up. And as expected, we're going to have a good conversation. Let's go directly to the calls from Southern Indiana. We've got Chris calling, listening on WFIA. Chris, go right ahead.
Sir, I think as a Christian pastor ministering to a lot of 18 to 25-year-olds, it seems to me one of the reasons a lot of folks are hesitant to get married is because they see a lot of marriages that are ending in very ugly divorces. And they're hesitant to get involved in something that may lead to that. And I think that's led to this obsessive search for Mr. or Mrs. Right. And they're just not finding that person. And because they've seen so many failed marriages, they're hesitant to get involved in a marriage. They're hesitant to commit. I'd just like to see what your comments are in regard to that, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for your call. I have to tell you that in one sense, you remind me of one of the obvious questions of our day, and that is, what will we expect the children of the baby boomers to look like? I mean, just consider the baby boomers themselves, the most coddled generation in American history, and a generation that, in many cases, still hasn't grown up, I think we could say. They did get married in the main and have kids, but frankly, they've tried to keep their lifestyles and all the other things going as well. It's a generational generalization. I understand that. There are exceptions to every generalization. But there's no doubt when we're talking about the baby boomers, we're talking about a generation. Well, again, I've talked about this before. I think one of the great books – no, that's not true. One of the great book titles of the last several years is How to Get Your Kids to Say No in the 90s When You Said Yes in the 60s. I think that book just pretty much becomes a parable, that title of the baby boomers. By the way, that point was also made by someone who wrote our website responding to my article published earlier this week. Lisa Ann said this, being in the midst – being one of the few grown-ups in the Twixter segment of the population, I can honestly say that most of my peers are the results of dysfunctional families that have never parented them in such a way as to teach them how to grow up! Exclamation point. It's not that these kids are refusing to grow up, it's just that your age group forsook the raising and training up of children in the way that they ought to go. Remember all that rebelling in the late 60s and through the 70s? Well, we don't remember it, but we certainly are paying for it. That's why folks my age are desperate for mentors in their churches, and even still, we can't hardly get the older ones to come alongside the younger and teach us what we need to know. Good grief. That sounds like a word of genuine prophecy. And confrontation from one of the Twixters, in this case, one who is married and has entered adulthood, but is very much concerned about her peers. I appreciate that. Let's go very quickly to Daniel, calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on AM 1220. Daniel, go right ahead.
Yes, thank you. I'm here. I'm a prime example. I'm a 31-year-old male, and I just had my first reality check through your program. Still poking around for a career. Don't have a plan. Now I just realized that eventually I don't care about the plan. I just never thought about it as I should. I got my mom at home that will, that just paid off my 92 Toyota Camry, that moves me around Monday through Friday from job to home. I got a girlfriend, and if I fail to pay any bills, hey mom, I need help. Here's your help. My mom and my dad got divorced when I was 6 years old. I never had a, I guess, a male figure in my life to tell me sometimes you have to take responsibility. That leads me to another subject. I can only imagine how the kids are going to grow up if they're going to have two daddies or two mommies. I think they're just going to become monsters, whether they're going to be successful or not successful. But, oh, my God, I just realized that.
Daniel, hold on just a minute. You know, when you think about this, you were talking about a whole process of generational confusion, and I really appreciate your honesty. I mean, that is a refreshing word of firsthand experience, and you're a brave man to make this call, and I think you're going to help a lot of others to help think this through. But, Daniel, when you think about this generation and the rest, I just want to say to you personally, God has a better plan for your life. And I would be very thankful to know that maybe this conversation today, this program, may have been used in some way to kind of show you something to which you can aspire. But I got to tell you this, you'll be a better man as a husband, and you'll be a better man as a father, because you'll be surprised how God uses those experiences not only to make you what you aren't today, but to make you what he had intended for you to be all along. And we as Christians understand this in a way that others do not, because we understand that life isn't some kind of experiment we're just kind of playing with and living out. but that God has a design for humanity that centers in obedience to Christ, obedience to His Word, and leads to great respect for, and indeed a yearning for, the institutions of marriage and family. And that means the responsibilities of fatherhood, being a husband, and parenthood, and the whole picture. We're indebted to Daniel for his call. My guess is he's speaking for an entire generation. A lot of you out there who ought to call as well. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. It'd be great to hear from a parent who's had, one of these pictures move back in. Call and tell us what that's all about. From Orlando, Florida, I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. We're looking at Time Magazine's cover story this week on the Twixters, the generation in the late 20s and the early 30s that just won't grow up. And, you know, Lev Grossman's written a fascinating article. The individual vignettes, I think, offer an awful lot of insight. Take Kate Galantha, for instance, age 28. This young woman took a full 7 years to complete her college degree, eventually graduating with still no declared major in 2001. She began working as a nanny. She's moved to six different places since 1999. And it's still uncertain to where she's going to move, what she's going to do. Zach Braff, age 29, is a film director and actor. He spoke of his own generation. He said, in the past, people got married and got a job and had kids, but now there's a new 10 years that people are using to try to find out what kind of life they want to lead. For a lot of people, the weight of all the possibility is overwhelming. Interesting. The demographic reality tells part of the tale, but of course, every one of these stories has a personal dimension as well. Let's go to the callers. Gilly calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Gilly.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Moeller. I just love your program. I listen to it every day. I want you to know that.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to let you know that I think as mothers of our daughters, and I'm sure dads of their sons, we've been instrumental in this. There was a time, and I'm ashamed to say this, when I would say to my girls, you should wait until you're 30, until you're married. Now, I thank God that they did not listen to me and listen to the urgings of their heart and listen to the Lord. And my older daughter is married, and when she was married, there was a lot of clucking of tongues because, you know, what were we allowing our young daughter to get married?
Now, Gilly, I really appreciate your call, and I want to ask you a question because I detect real motherly concern in your voice, and I appreciate your spirit as well as the point you're making. Let me ask you, when you were telling your daughters to wait until 30, you had to have a reason. You know, what was the reason behind that, and how has your mind changed?
Well, I really was siding with the culture, believing that women were some kind of superhero. It wasn't just that women were oppressed, but feminist culture, which I was, you know, on that bandwagon, I'm ashamed to say, really elevates womanhood to a point of superwoman, superhero. And I wanted my girls to take advantage of that. I'm ashamed of that, and I've confessed that to them.
But that's beautiful, Gilly. I mean, frankly, your motherly approach and love there, and I think, you know, your testimony here is worth doing the program, just to hear how you spoke of how your mind had changed. And I want to tell you, it is a widespread phenomenon. I heard, not from someone whose mind had changed, but from someone who would have agreed with you before you changed your mind, Gilly, I heard from a mother who wrote me after my article published earlier this week, and she said, I am encouraging my daughters to go ahead and start their careers. They need to go and pursue careers and think about marriage sometime in the future. Well, that says more eloquently and clearly than anything I could say that the priority in that mother's mind is the job. Well, you know, what you sow, so you shall reap. And, you know, let me tell you this. She's not going to have a bouncing baby grand job on her knee. You know, what kind of fulfillment is going to come out of this? You know, we have, and let's face it, we've all kind of bought into this at times in our lives, and we've certainly been seduced by it and tempted by it, the idea to think that our job, our profession is more important than anything else. Well, you know, in a biblical worldview, that's just nonsense. Better to be married and poor and enjoying family as God's gift than rich, single, confused, and self-centered. And that's the reality that this generation is facing. Thank you for your call, Gilly. We're going to go to Sally. Sally, welcome to the Albert Moeller Program.
Thank you. Praise God for this message. What an amazing topic to be talking about today. I am 25, and I was just telling the prompter there how I believe that this is really affecting the generation, men predominantly. If Satan's going to attack anybody, it's going to be the man who is the leader of the home, the companies, the world. And I see this effect in men. They are taking longer to finish college. Once they finish college, they are just being lackadaisical about what kind of profession, even after that they can do. And I guess they're not feeling any urge there to get married. Nothing seems appealing to them because it's like a smorgasbord of things to do in life. And know, I just think it's a spiritual issue. If we're going to talk root problem here, and I think that it trickles down to the women, that want that for their lives, and there's not any men out there that are really desiring that for them. So it's very disheartening.
Sally, thank you so much. And let me tell you, I think you're on to something really big in this. And I talk about this all over the country, and sometimes it's appreciated, sometimes it's not. But let me tell you what I say to the guys. An awful lot of these 20-somethings and 30-somethings are just boys. I mean, we have this extended boy culture in the male side of the equation, in which these young guys, I just look how they dress. I mean, they're still dressing like little teenagers. They're going around with their sneakers and their, you know, cargo pants hanging off their hips. They walk around, they slouch around, and I mean, they just won't grow up. A lot of them can't even shake a man's hand and look him in the eye. They can't have a decent adult conversation. It's their conversational tone is a series of disconnected grunts. You know, what we have here are people who are intelligent, and yet they've just never been made to grow up. And I think this generation has, and I'm glad this generation, for instance, never had to experience the kind of war experience that the World War II generation had to experience. But you know what? You grow up pretty fast in a foxhole. When someone's shooting at you, you learn how to grow up real fast. This generation just hasn't done that. And I agree with those who say the parents have a lot of the responsibility to bear here. Undoubtedly. But, you know, that's one of the tasks of adulthood is figuring out eventually you're on your own two feet. And you're going to have to stand and do what it takes. Sally's on to something else here. And that is that men have to lead. I mean, that's just the way it is. I don't care if you're a feminist, a post-feminist, you name it. Still, that's the way it is, and I believe it's because that's the way God intended it to be, and that means that a man has to grow up and learn how to assert leadership. I mean, ask a girl out? Eventually ask a woman to marry him? That's a risk. That's what leadership's all about. He has to have a plan for his life. A young man who intends to get married can't just say, hey, I'm handsome and I got neat sneakers. He's going to have to say, I can support you. I would be a good husband. I will be a good father. And you know what? I think God uses the sex drive and all the rest in a young man's life, hopefully to make him uncomfortable enough and motivated enough to say, you know, I just better go shave and get ready and get a job and get an education so that I can make somebody a decent husband and some children a decent role model, parent, and father. That's the big picture. I think God uses all of this to call us to be what we otherwise would not be. And that's why this demographic trend is not just about, well, social security, economic, and political factors, but about spiritual factors as well. Because God uses the experiences of life and the responsibilities of marriage and family to make his saints conform to the image of the Lord Jesus Christ. I'll be back with the final thoughts in just a moment. I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back. You know, looking at this cover story, you have to look beyond the demographic reality, even beyond the individuals that are covered in the story, and see the need of an entire generation for some encouragement to grow up and assume the responsibilities of adulthood. And the biggest thing is not so much what society is missing out and what they should be contributing, but I have to say, I think the biggest issue here is what they are missing in not assuming the responsibilities and the joys of parenthood, of adulthood, of marriage. Now, I know there are a lot of parents out there who are saying, my kids just aren't ready to get married. Well, whose fault is that? And I hear from young people all the time who say, listen, I'm in my 20s, but I'm not ready to be married yet. I'm not mature enough to be married. Well, you know what? Who's responsible for that, and who's going to solve that problem? Eventually, it comes down to the fact that one of the realizations of adulthood is it really is up to me, period. No one can do this for me. And, you know, even if someone may try to pay my bills and be willing to do that and let me move back home and all the rest, eventually you're going to have to grow up one way or another. And, you know, earlier is better than later because you're missing out on a whole lot. And, of course, it does have demographic impact. It does have economic, social, political impact. But the biggest issue for us from a Christian worldview perspective is the fact that these people are missing out on what God made them to be. I wish we had time to take all the callers from across the country. The phone lines have been completely lit up. We had Frank calling from Cleveland, Ohio, who wanted to argue, I think very perceptively, that a lot of this should be laid at the feet of those preachers who simply aren't doing expository preaching and laying all this out so that their church members would understand the responsibilities that God has given us as his creatures. Dan was calling from Boone, Iowa to say, as a Twixter, one of these, that this is largely a product of what society has done. This society does not encourage this age cohort, this age group, to grow up and assume this responsibility. So you know what? Dan, we got to create a counterculture. And the church has done this before. We've got to create a culture in which we say we're going to be defined by what God has intended, and we're going to assume that to be normal rather than letting the external world tell us, hey, just delay this, watch Friends, hang around with your pals, sleep around where you want, and delay the responsibilities of adulthood as far into the future as you want. You know what? There are some natural barriers to this. As a leading fertility specialist said to me just in recent weeks, most of the problems that many couples face are simply the fact that they are marrying late and they're trying to have children so late. You know, it just might be that God's put a clock right in our bodies. I have a feeling it's so. Great conversation today, folks. Take a look at the Time article and go to albertmohler.com. That's MOHLER.com. You'll see my analysis. The article is entitled "The Generation That Won't Grow Up." We're broadcasting today live from Orlando, Florida. It's good to be down here in the Sunshine State. I got to tell you, they made a lot of progress since we did all the coverage of the hurricanes. Thanks to Russ Shubin on this end, our engineering staff, production staff in Louisville. Next week, I'll be back in Louisville for the Albert Mohler program. 5 days of conversation. We'll put truth on the line. Meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.